In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, the Creator and the Sustainer of the Universe, I greet you with the greetings of all of the prophets from Abraham to Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him, Assalamu alaikum, which means peace be unto you. I'm your host, Hamid Rashid. In today's program, we begin the 13th program in our fourth series dealing with Muslim beliefs. Today's topic will deal with the question of free will and predestination. Joining me on the program is Dr. Jamal Badawi of St. Mary's University. Welcome to Islam in Focus, Brother Jamal.
Thank you.
Can we start off today's program by perhaps you giving us a brief summary of the nature of the arguments related to this question of free will and predestination?
Okay. From time immemorial, human beings have always faced a very difficult question, a dilemma, really. Are we as human beings free agents? Do we have free will? Do we really control our destiny? Do we have a choice to select our destiny? Or are we simply following some predestined path that has been already decreed or pre-decreed before we are even born? The dilemma here is in fact a result of a question that if we are truly free agents and we determine our own destiny, where does God fit? If we believe in God, as any believer would, as the sole and ultimate power in this universe, if we believe in God as one who possesses perfect knowledge of the past, present and future, then where does he fit? If we claim that we control our destiny 100%, that nobody else controls our destiny, there seems to be some contradiction there. But again, you run into a dilemma when you take the other assumption. If we say that we are predestined, that everything we do in this life is something that we are pushed into because God decreed that we should do that because he has the knowledge and the will, then why is it then that we are held responsible before God in the Day of Judgment? See, the main point here is that any believer accepts the notion that the things that takes place that take place in this universe do not take place just as a coincidence, that there is definitely certain plan, there is certain wisdom that God has behind the various happenings. But this is the kind of dilemma. Why are we to be held accountable? And if not, where does God's will, power, and knowledge fit into the whole picture?
Well, how have the various philosophers and the theologians attempted to answer these questions?
Well, that's a big question. In fact, you know, the books of philosophy would be full of all details. I do not purport to go into this confusing details. I think at the expense of oversimplification, let me put it in a way that I hope everybody will be able to follow without too much difficulty. Mm-hmm. But basically, they seem to have been two extremes in answering that question. There are those who held the view that we as human beings are totally free agents, and that if God has any knowledge of our deeds, it is something that comes after the fact. In other words, we make our choice, we determine exactly what we want to do. And even those people who believe in God among this school, they say, okay, God knows everything, but he knows after we do it. But it is we who control our destiny. Some go to one extreme even to say that there's nothing even like God or anything. We control our destiny. It's up to us to do or not to do certain things. This is one extreme. On the other hand, you get another extreme, which I call fatalism, which has nothing to do with Islam, as some people perhaps mistakenly think. And that is to adopt exactly the opposite assumption. To say that if we truly believe in God, if we believe in His absolute will and perfect knowledge, then we must accept the fact that nothing happens in this universe against His will, because He is the supreme power, He is the sovereign of the universe. And as such, they say that whatever we do, whatever happens to us, whatever behavior even we choose to do, is something that we are predestined to do. It's pre-decreed. And that applies, by the way, not only to believers. Even non-believers used to hold this kind of fatalistic approach. For example, a person who does not believe in God at all, he says, all right, the time predetermined what I'm going to do. Luck. Destiny, without even believing in God. Even polytheists who believed in several gods, they had also the belief that, certain gods determine the destiny in this area of life or that area of life. Believers in one God, like monotheistic faith, so-called, who adopted also this particular explanation, they also said, all right, it is God, or the one and only God, who determined what we are going to do. But basically they meet all in one particular point, that is the fatalistic approach. There is no sense of trying. In other words, everything is predestined. We are simply doing what we are supposed to do. So the issue of choice, comparison, is not really that significant in this kind of approach.
Well, let's then move on, and I'd like to ask you about the position of Islam on this issue. Many people have said that Muslims believe in predestination. To start with, what is the actual term that is used in the Quran to refer to this issue, and what does it mean?
Well, I'm glad that you're bringing things to original, because there is a great deal of confusion when people depend on English translations about various concepts and principles of Islam. And many times the errors even is committed by Muslims themselves, who are not totally aware of the full implication of some of the English terms, at least the connotated meaning that goes with the term. Most often people talk about this as a Muslim belief and put it in the term predestination.
Mm-hmm.
Predestination. Well, while technically this may be correct in one sense, but when you talk predestination, most people get the distinct impression of fatalism. Indeed, some writers about Islam, especially among non-Muslims, fall into the error of interpreting this belief as fatalism.
Mm-hmm.
As such, it's very useful to go back to the original term that appears in the Quran itself about that subject. Find out where the word came from and what exactly does it mean. The Islamic term for this subject, free will, is qadar. Qadar, like K-A-D-A-R, qadar. And when you go to the strict meaning of the word, qadar means measure. That is something in due measure or due proportion. It also means judgment. Let's take the word measure. If you go back to the some of the verses that appear in the Quran using that term, you find that it has no connotation, as some people think, with fatalism. Mm-hmm. Example. One verse in the Quran, it says, "Inna kulla shay'in khalaqnahu biqadar." God says, everything in this universe, have we created in due measure. Exact measure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In another verse in the Quran, it talks about God's creation, and it says, وَخَلَقَ كُلَّ شَيْءٍ فَقَدَّرَهُ تَقْدِيرًا. That is, God created everything in due proportion. There are plenty of other quotations in the Quran that, again, follows the same kind of line. For example, when it says, وَالْقَمَرَ قَدَّرَهُ مَنَازِلٌ. that God has ordained or determined the cycle of the moon. قدره, the same word exactly, or the same derivative from the same root is used, which means God appointed certain laws or cycle for the moon. When you put this together, it gives a clear understanding then that what the Quran means by qadr is not really predestination, as some people may think, but rather that God created this universe in accordance with certain laws. We may not understand fully all of those laws, but there are certain due proportion, as the verse say, or due measure in the creation of God. That due measure could apply to physical existence, like, you know, the laws that controls the rotation of the earth around its axis, around the sun, around the moon, the distance, the number of days that it takes to make these various revolutions. This is a due measure. This is qadr also. But as God created the universe also in accordance with these laws, there are also certain laws in society, in behavior, which follow certain rules also, or qadr, that God has created. No wonder then we find the Quran says that وَلَا تَجِدُ لِسُنَّتِنَا تَحْوِيلًا, that is, the laws of God, sunnah means the laws or the pattern that God created, nobody can change. It is not changeable. The super or broad laws that control the universe as well as social structure is something that God has created already, and nobody can change it at will. So if you're asking me as to what English term could best reflect this article of faith in Islam, I find myself hesitant. Some people, for example, use the term destiny instead of predestination, like a Muslim scholar by the name of Iqbal. There are some who use the term as divine decree, that God has certain divine decree before even the creation of the earth. I still feel not fully comfortable with either translations, whether you talk about predestination, destiny, or divine decree. I would rather prefer to use the original term in Arabic, qadr, and for the purpose of communication, I would say measure, or due proportion.
Mm-hmm. I'm interested in knowing how you would respond to the people who would suggest that if our destinies are known to God, why then are we punished for our deviations? Why does he punish us for our deviations? I'm sure some people must be would raise that question when we talk about this particular subject.
In other words, why are we held accountable if God controls everything?
Right. How would you respond to somebody who would make that statement?
Okay. On one hand, it is erroneous to say that anything in this universe happens against the will of God, or else he would not be God. His omnipresence, omnipotence would be really negated by this. But on the other hand, it is also erroneous to say that any evil deed that we do, we blame it on God and say that's his will. I think the confusion can be cleared by making a distinction between two separate aspects in our lives. There are certain aspects of our life for which we have some control, we have some free will, and there are other aspects of our lives where we don't have any control. And maybe that removes the confusion. You see, the mere question, when people say, are we free agents or are we predestined? The very fact that the question arises is a result from the fact that in our observation of what happens, we feel that some aspects we don't have free will, and some aspects in our lives we do have a choice, or else the question would have not risen to start with.
Yes.
So the distinction then can be made in this way. There are aspects in our lives where we don't have any control. Example, you don't control when you're going to be born. You don't control what color, complexion of your skin will be. You don't control what your features will look like. You don't control how your heart is going to beat. All right? We don't have any control on these things. But are we held responsible for that? The answer is no. God, out of his justice, does not hold us responsible. He doesn't come to us in the day of judgment, why you were born short or tall, or where you were born in this day, or why your features look like this or that. We are not held responsible for that. Mm-hmm. So what's the protest? Mm-hmm. Actually, it's out of the mercy of God that we didn't have much control over these things. Because in one sense, if we don't control, if we do control, for example, the operation of our hearts and livers and you know, our digestive system, then what happens to us when we are asleep? How can we keep our heart pumping the blood in our bodies? So it's out of the mercy of God that he relieved us from having control over these basic natural functions. Mm-hmm. We are not responsible for that. But on the other hand, this does not negate that there are elements in our lives where we do have control, where we can have a free choice. Nobody can convince me by any argument that I don't have a free choice between taking a gun and going and murdering somebody, and between taking bread and food to somebody who's hungry. I could do good and evil. I do have freedom of choice. I do have the freedom as a human being to believe in God or to say there's nothing like God. You know, it's up to me. As human beings, we do have the free will to accept to follow the path of God, his moral laws, the kind of duties and responsibilities he's assigned to us, or we can say, I don't care. I'm doing only what I like, what I think I want. Only in this second aspect or second sphere where we have some control are we held accountable. So this distinction, I hope, would make it logical and easier to distinguish between the areas of no control and the areas where we have control, and as such we are held accountable.
Just to pursue this point or this question a little bit further, some people might still argue that the Quran itself states that it's God who guides us. So they would say, if God didn't guide me to be good, why then does he punish me if I'm bad?
Okay, I think the question is quite common and interesting. But you know, the same people who ask and say, why, if God didn't guide me, why does he punish me? If they are they happen to be good people and are rewarded in the day of judgment, they don't ask the opposite question.
Yes, right. See,
they don't say, for example, why does God rewarded me or put me into paradise if he knew that I'm going to do that? See, that's the reflection of human bias. You know, you want to have your cake and eat it. But okay, let me approach this again in terms of explaining what guidance means. Just like we were explaining also two spheres of life and how they relate. When you talk about guidance also, it could have two meanings. And I'll give you the evidence also on that from the Quran itself. One meaning of guidance is to point out the path, to show the path. The other meaning of guidance is to help someone who has already chosen that path, to take him or her, let's say, by the hand, literally, to help you more once you have made up your mind. Let me give you a very simple example, and I don't mean to make that similitude, because we shouldn't make similitude with God, but it just give us in a very approximate sense what that really means. Suppose you get lost somewhere on the highway. You're looking for a particular destination to go to.
Mm-hmm.
You go to a cop, policeman, standing there, and say, sir, can you tell me how can I get to X town? And he tells you, okay, you drive 3 blocks down the road. There is a stoplight, you turn right, and then you turn left again at the first stoplight. You go for 4 blocks, and you hit highway number X straight until you see the sign of that city or town. Okay? He provided the guidance already. He pointed the way. Now, people could react differently to that fellow. Somebody would look at the policeman and say, hey, what do you know? I don't believe you.
Mm-hmm.
Policeman probably will shrug his shoulder, more or less say, all right, I've done my duty. I pointed the way. If you don't trust me or don't believe me, I'm sorry, sir. What can I tell you? Another person would say, thank you very much. I really appreciated that. I'll just follow the instructions. Noting that the person really is appreciative of the guidance, the policeman might say, hey, wait a minute. I'm also going in that direction. Why don't you wait for just a couple of minutes? I'll finish my round here. Just follow me. I'll take you there. I'm going there. Which means that the policeman is getting out of his way even to help you more because you chose to follow his instruction. Now, I hope nobody would mistake me to liken the policeman with God or anything of that sort. But like I said early, without meaning to have full analogy, in a way also we can say that one level of guidance was provided by God to all human beings, mm-hmm. regardless. There is no discrimination or distinction on that basic level. And that is to point the way to us, to show us the path of truth and falsehood. How? Various ways. First of all, within our pure instinctive nature, God has inculcated in us the knowledge of truth and falsehood, good and evil. Like the Quran says, وَنَفْسٍ وَمَا سَوَّاهَا فَأَلْهَمَهَا فُجُورَهَا وَتَقْوَهَا. That God has created our souls, ourselves, in the best possible fashion, and inspired into each soul the knowledge of good and evil, right and wrong. Even before you hear any preacher or prophet, we know that from our creation. That's one source of our responsibility. Secondly, God has endowed us also with intellect. Not to consider intellect as the antithesis or the opposite of faith, but to use the intellect as confirmation of faith. We have to use that intellect, and that intellect also would show us, in addition to instinctive feeling, natural, innate nature, would show us also the right and wrong. But beyond that also, he has given us guidance through prophets and messengers that he has sent throughout history. With those prophets, he sent holy books or scriptures to show us the way. So each human being, regardless, has received one or more, or I should say even two or more of those sources of guidance. There's no distinction there. But it is up to us. There are some people who say, all right, I don't believe in God. I don't accept scriptures. I don't accept this. I don't accept that. And are bent on evil, bent on crookedness, bent on selfishness, let's say. Well, what can you do? These people did not choose the right path. How could they blame God for their own infractions? On the other hand, those who choose the path, God will give them additional support, additional help. The Quran put it very succinctly. It says, وَالَّذِينَ اهْتَدَوْا زَادَهُمْ هُدًى. Those who are guided or accepted to be guided, God increased them in guidance. That is because they have taken the path of truth, God increased that guidance. In the second chapter of the Quran, it also talks about the Quran being hudan lil muttaqin, guidance to those who are God-fearing. So once we develop the attitude of knowledge of God, of fear of God, not fear being scared, but you know, trying to please God, then our hearts would be open to the inspiration and benefit of the scripture. Otherwise, we won't get it. So in that sense, then, we could say that there are two levels of guidance. If you want additional help, you've got to take the step. In a beautiful saying that was narrated by Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, it says that when a person gets closer to God by 1 inch, God will get closer to him by 1 yard. If a person gets closer to God by 1 yard, God will get closer to him 1 mile. Mm-hmm. Which means that once we take the step, we accept the instructions and try to follow it in our lives, we get additional blessing. But everybody is guided in a sense of being inspired the truth, regardless of his own response.
In the 5 minutes or so that we have remaining on the program, I have two other questions that I want to touch with you. Firstly, let's look at this question of suffering in the world. Many people ask the question of, with all the suffering in the world, how does that fit in with the notion of God as a merciful God?
The biggest problem that we face here is that we sometimes try to judge God's wisdom by our own human standards. That's where the main problem really lies. Let me show you first that as human beings, we are not capable of making judgment on something that is beyond the capacity of our intellect. As human beings, how do we define evil? We are biased from one individual to the other and from one point of time to the other. Example, when the rain falls, it may be regarded as good for a farmer who benefits to get his vegetation grow, it might be regarded as evil from someone who is intending to go for a picnic. See, as human beings, we differ even on the very same act as to whether it's good or evil. Even at different points of time, we have different views. If you're driving to Halifax International Airport to catch a flight, for example, and there's a traffic jam and you miss the flight, that's evil. You regard that as evil because you missed the flight. It's too bad. A few minutes later, if you hear that the plane that you're supposed to take crashed, you say, that was good that I missed it. The evil becomes good just in a minute. So as human beings, when we judge what is good and what's evil, we are biased by our human nature. Of course, we cannot get out of this human nature, but we cannot be so haughty or arrogant so as to question God, why did you create this and why did you create that? The Quran puts it very clearly. لا يسأل عما يفعل وهم يسألون. God is not to be questioned about his decision, his wisdom. But you as human beings, or they as human beings, are to be questioned on their own deeds. It doesn't mean, of course, that we are not supposed to think at all about some of the possibilities of why good and evil exist in this world. One possible explanation that some people, for example, give is that if there was no evil, we would have not known the good. If there was no sickness, we'd have not appreciated health. If there is no death, we'd have not appreciated life, and so on. So in a way, this could be only partial explanation, but one has to be very honest and frank that above all, the ultimate judgment about the wisdom of God is not up to us. But definitely, there must be some higher level of wisdom that exceeds and supersedes our human wisdom. Many times, we discover that things that we used to regard as evil for centuries may turn out to have some good. Many times people say, why did God create insects, those ugly things? Yes. Right. But later on we discover that insects do serve certain purpose in terms of pollinization or whatever other purposes. And there's some balance that we may not fully understand. But we have to approach it with humbleness to God.
In the 2 minutes that we have left, I wonder if you could just comment on the effect of Muslim belief in Qadr or measure on his or her attitudes and behavior.
Okay, first of all, a Muslim belief in Qadr does not mean that there's only one Qadr or one measure. Mm-hmm. As I explained that before, it's kind of laws of God, and laws actually could be in the plural. Example of this, sickness could be regarded as Qadr, as a destiny. But Islam also regards treatment as a destiny. So choose your destiny. Good is a destiny. Evil is a destiny. But you can choose a destiny. So there is not only one destiny, but there are so many destinies in plural from which it is up to the human being to choose. Okay? So once the Muslim have this belief that God has created all those destinies, then he directs his or her energies and attention to try and understand those destinies and choose what is more appropriate and what is more useful. A second aspect of that is that the person would not be over anxious and have much anxiety about what's going to happen to him or her. The person should try his best, like we said before, to select the right destiny among the various destinies available. But if the result turns out to be different or contrary to what the person really wanted or hoped for, then a person would not be broken-hearted and say, oh, I wish I did this and that. Oh my goodness, if I didn't do this, such and such thing could have happened or could have not happened. Because once you get into this line, you're always in a self-recrimination type of state, which is very difficult to be productive with. That's why the Quran, in conclusion of the question, for example, in chapter 57, in verse 23, it says that مَا أَصَابَ مِن مُصِيبَةٍ فِي الْأَرْضِ وَلَا فِي أَنفُسِكُمْ إِلَّا فِي كِتَابٍ مِن قَبْلِ أَن نَبْرَأَهَا. Nothing that happens to you, any disaster, that happens on earth or in yourselves, but it is written in a book before even this earth was created. So that leads the person to accept the decision or the what happens to him after, of course, after trying his best first of all to avoid negative things and after trying his best also to deal with difficult situation that he's facing, but leaving the result to God after exerting effort.
Thank you, Brother Jamal. That's our time for the Islam in Focus program today. We want to invite you back next week when we'll conclude our fourth series on Muslim beliefs, and we'll discuss the question of the books revealed by Allah. Following that, we'll start our new series, our fifth series on the pillars of Islam. Thank you for watching. Assalamu alaikum. Peace be upon you.
Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar.